Good afternoon. Thank you for joining the meeting. We'll get started. In accordance with state law regarding public meetings held via electronic equipment, this meeting will be recorded and the recording will be posted on the authority's website. Next order of business is to start with a roll call for the committee members. I'm Susan Martin, interim chair of this committee. Mike Angelini.
Present.
Lawrence Davis. Daryl Hill.
Present.
Peter Lisi.
Present.
Other board members, Steve Elbaum, Kim Kennison, Alan Manamano. Okay. And we have a couple of guests, Sandy Stallings.
Here.
And Richard, is it Charles?
Charles, yes. Good morning. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And then we have staff. Jeanette Weldon?
Here.
Rebecca Ablett?
Here.
Denise Anguilera?
Here.
Rob Blake? Dan Karowski?
Here.
Joanne Makowitz?
Present.
Michael Morris?
Present.
Cynthia Peoples?
I'm here.
Julia Polano? Julia's here and she's on mute. Does she have to say that she's here? Denise, no? All right. And Kara Stewart.
I'm here.
Thank you. All right, thank you. Next item of business this afternoon is approval of the minutes from the Special Audit Finance Committee that was held on May 18th. And I have a motion.
So move, Mike Angelini.
I'm second. Peter Lisi, happy to second it.
Any comments, edits, or corrections? All in favor of approving those minutes, say aye.
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 Any abstentions or not approvals? No. All right, thank you. The next item of business is to hear a report from the BLX Group, which is their arbitrage internal audit engagement report. So with that, I will turn it over to Sandy and company.
Thank you. As far as you recall, about 18 months ago, BLX was engaged to provide a review of CHIFA's procedures related to arbitrage compliance services it provides for its borrowers, as well as a review of the actual internal arbitrage computations that are provided. Our findings were presented in January 2021, and in April of 2022, we were engaged to provide a subsequent review of the updated procedures and reporting. And so today's presentation is just a brief highlight of our report on these updates. So Kara, if you want to go to the first slide, please. So first of all, we'll start with our scope. We provided a review of CHIFA's newly revised procedures related to the arbitrage compliance for their borrowers. We were also tasked with reviewing the arbitrage computations to be sure that they were updated to utilize the revised procedures and make sure that they're in accordance with the and applied in these internal computations. And then to also provide an updated report for the Audit Finance Committee detailing the scope, findings, and recommendations. Next slide, please. As far as our sampling size, our initial scope in 2020 included 16 of the 200 outstanding bond issues for CHIFA's borrowers. But given the timing of arbitrage computations, only two of those 16 bond issues that we previously reviewed required updated computations since our initial review. So those two bond issues were what we focused on as part of this review update. Next slide, please. Our review of the new CHIFA procedures reflected that they were updated to address some areas that we noted as needing improvement in our initial review related to spending exceptions, universal cap, yield restriction, mixed escrows, and yield period optimizations. These are some of the most highly technical or complicated areas of arbitrage compliance. And we noted that some of these recommendations were not addressed, either due to their immateriality or negative arbitrage, or even the elimination of tax-exempt advance refundings, making some of these requirements less likely to have to be applied in the future. Next slide, please. In our review of the CHIPA updated internal arbitrage reporting, we noted that the reports were updated to include increased regulatory basis and improved technical analysis, specifically related to bond valuations, reserve allocations, and yield restriction. Again, these are very highly complicated areas of tax law that we have to apply in the arbitrage computations. We noted that the borrower's special capital reserve allocations were updated and prepared on a reasonable basis to account for bond proceeds, transfer proceeds, and an allocation of replacement proceeds. So this was a fairly complex allocation model that had to be established and updated, and it looked solid. We noted that with regard to yield restriction related to the same special capital reserve fund, that the computations included 100% of this fund, despite the portion being in excess of a reasonably required reserve, being the only portion that's required to be yield restricted. So we noted that this has the potential to attribute too much negative arbitrage in periods of low interest rates. For your information, a reasonably required reserve is defined as the lesser of 100% or 10% of par value, 125% of average annual debt service, or max annual debt service. And this can be determined on a parity basis. Okay, next slide, please. As far as a risk rating, we've ranked the level of risk for CHIPA and non-compliance with the arbitrage provisions as low, and it's rated as a low risk given the negative arbitrage environment we've had for more than a decade, and many of the borrower's bonds either meet a spending exception or have considerable negative arbitrage. Next slide, please. And we've rated the CHIPA compliance with these arbitrage provisions and the updated procedures, as well as the improved internal reporting, as strong, as there were no high risk or medium risk rated findings were identified. Next slide, please. And we provided a draft report to management a few weeks ago, and the responses we received back were reasonable with respect to both the procedures review as well as the updated arbitrage reporting review. And we firmly support the comment by management to perform biannual reviews of procedures just to confirm that they're up to date if there's any potential regulatory changes. And that concludes our highlights, unless Richard has anything he wants to add or if anyone has any questions or comments. Thank you.
Does anybody have any questions?
I don't, but I'm going to put it right out there. This is, for me, this is a very technical area, and I'm not going to profess a whole lot of proficiency here. So I would welcome to hear from people that know a lot more about this than I do. Everything you said, I'm thrilled. It sounds like CHIPA is headed in the right direction. We've corrected some of the things that needed attention, but I certainly am going to defer to people with far greater knowledge in this area than I do. But thank you, Sandy.
Sure. Glad to do it.
And I was glad to hear you say, even to you, it's a very technical thing, because it sure is to me.
So anybody with far greater knowledge than Peter and myself have any comments or questions?
Oh, that's a pretty big universe, people with far greater knowledge than me. That's a big universe.
Hi, I just want to acknowledge that Lawrence has joined. Sorry for being late.
Thank you, Lawrence.
Thank you, Lawrence.
Does staff have any comments or questions? You had your responses in there. Anything you want to highlight for us?
Hi, this is Richard Charles. I just wanted to interject one thought, and it doesn't really change the findings of BLX that Sandy reported on, which are favorable, as was observed. Any things that had to be changed, the agency's done a good job of making those changes and addressing the methodology, so it is improved. And so this was a good process. Just the one observation that I wanted to make is that Sandy pointed out that out of your many bond deals, a lot of them were deep negative arbitrage, and that's because we have been in an environment of very, very low investment returns, and therefore the investment returns on the investment of bond proceeds was below the borrowing cost, creating negative arbitrage. And that's been an experience that you've had on many of your deals, and many issuers across the country have had the same thing. In addition, for many of your deals, the proceeds are spent quickly, which therefore meets the arbitrage rebate spending exceptions and avoids the need to do technical arbitrage rebate reports. Going forward, what I just wanted to make a comment in the rising interest rate environment that we are experiencing right now, we are already seeing many municipalities that, although their tax-exempt borrowing rate is going up, it is also the case that the reinvestment rate is going up. And so we are now seeing bond deals that are entering the market with positive arbitrage. So in this rising interest rate environment, you may see your deals in the future have positive arbitrage, and you will still see many of your deals that meet the spending exceptions, and that'll still be very helpful for your compliance, achieving compliance. But I just wanted to put on the table that going forward, it is likely that we will be in a positive arbitrage environment, and that will mean that compliance with the arbitrage requirements, highly technical, I'll admit to that, will be more important, and more important that your procedures remain rigorous and up to date.
Thank you. That's helpful. That was actually my question, what will happen in the future.
Right.
So just a question to staff. And again, I'm very naive. I don't know a lot about this either, but considering we haven't had to deal with that positive arbitrage, we have the policies and procedures. Are staff comfortable with having to, do we have the staff, and are they comfortable having to manage through whatever changes are going to happen?
So Michael and Dan, would you like to speak to that?
I would say yes, considering we have Dan.
It's all on you, Dan.
I think we're pretty confident, obviously. I think the way we operate, in the fact that we start the arbitrage compliance really day one. So working with a lot of the borrowers and monitor how they're spending the proceeds, encouraging them to meet those spending exceptions, I think puts us in a better position for making sure as we enter into a positive arbitrage era or for a certain period of time. So I think we're set up pretty good with that.
Thank you.
And Dan, is there more communication, right? We've all kind of gotten lulled to sleep by this environment where we haven't really had to worry about this too much. Is there more that should be done to communicate to issuers, to our clients about this, or are we sort of a one-stop shop for them anyway, and they're kind of alleviated with it, or from it, I should say?
Yeah, I say it's a little bit different. Last time we were in a positive arbitrage situation, a lot of the bond deals had debt service reserve funds, and that was one of the biggest sources. We don't have a lot of those anymore. The borrowers don't require it. So really the focus is right now is the construction funds. So that's why we really work with them, encourage them to spend it as quickly as possible,
right?
And really try to meet those exceptions so that it doesn't become the issue. They can earn whatever they want, and right, they don't have to pay any of that back.
Okay.
I think also that, we're limited with what we can invest in, and we normally keep things very liquid so we can meet the borrower's needs as far as their construction schedule. So, I mean, typically it's just in a money market account.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. If I may, I'll just, this is Richard again, just a few more words about the new environment. Give an example of a deal that we worked on very recently, and it was a very large deal, multiple hundred millions of dollars. And the investment portfolio for the construction fund, the yield was 80 basis points above the bond yield. So there's 80 basis points of positive arbitrage. As I said, it's a multiple hundred million dollar issue. And that will create, one, the challenge of, can that large of a deal be spent quickly enough to meet the spending exception? We'll see how that plays out. And if it doesn't meet the spending exception, with 80 basis points of positive arbitrage, the amount of rebate could be quite a significant figure. I'm going to note that that issuer for the construction fund evaluated the possibility of purchasing and investing in a guaranteed investment contract or in a structured portfolio of treasury securities, and they opted for the latter. BLX handled the bidding for that portfolio. And, you know, the good news is that they got a positive yield on the portfolio. And the reason I say that's good news is that while from a rebate point of view, having negative arbitrage, well, that's good. We don't have to pay rebate to the IRS. Oh, but that's bad from an economic point of view, because it means that your cost of borrowing is expensive compared to your reinvestment rate. So you really do want to earn positive arbitrage and then, you know, deal with paying the IRS the minimum amount that, you know, you can determine in compliance with the laws. So a lot of issuers have said, oh, great, negative arbitrage. We're so happy we had negative arbitrage. No, that's a bad thing. And in fact, I recently saw a very, very large deal with a very long construction period that, and the investment period was during this, you know, deep negative arbitrage. I was floored. They were negative arbitrage $100 million. That's really, from a financial point of view, that's really, really bad. So you want to earn positive arbitrage, and you want to be able to be in a position to monitor it and figure out what is the minimum amount you pay to the IRS.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments? Okay, thank you very much for that information and that report. Without any further questions or comments, a motion is requested to approve the arbitrage internal audit report from the BLX engagement.
I move acceptance of the report.
Is there a second?
I'll provide a second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Was I supposed to ask any abstentions or no's on that? But everybody, all in favor say aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. So the internal engagement report is approved. Okay, and then I'm going to turn it over to Cynthia to go over in more detail than we did at the last meeting, the operating and capital budgets for next year.
So Sandy and I are
going to talk. Thank you, Susan.
Yes, thank you, Sandy and Richard.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sandy. Thank you, Richard.
Bye-bye.
All right, so I will share my, I will share my screen so that we move forward. All right. So the presentation of the operating capital budget for fiscal year 2023. Just as a high-level overview of the budget and the summary. Operating revenues of $7.848 million, operating expenses $4.254 million, leaving us with an excess from operations of $3.593, and then non-operating revenues and expenses of $2.985, with a change in net position of $608,000. So as I look at the operating revenue budget proposal, So we had one new bond issue, which we expect to close before June 30 for the village for children and families. And then we included 8 new bond issues for 2023 with an additional budgeted revenues of $164,600. And our total administrative fee revenues are $7,617,000. And then just a visual here at the bottom of the page, we showed for fiscal year 2022 that we had originally budgeted $275 million in new money, and all of it was going to be new money with no refinancing anticipated at that time. And year to date for fiscal 2022, we have $854.9 million issued with almost 65% of that in new money and almost 35% of that in refinancing, as compared to our new money budget of $289.5 million bond issues for fiscal 2023. So our other operating revenues include our subsidiary support services of $190,000. This trails the fiscal 2022 budget. The distribution is 66% of that coming from CHESLA, 22% from Chief of CDC, and 12% from CSLF. The bond issuance fees for the 8 bond issues at $5,000 a bond issue is $40,000. And with the revolving loan interest revenue, we have 8 loans issued for this past fiscal year, totaling $600,000. And we have $540,000 outstanding and 11 loans at this time. So any other total operating revenues, the other $230.7,000, giving us a total budget operating revenues of $7.848 million. Does anyone have any questions about the revenue proposal? And before I move on to the expense proposal. Right. Now this year, I will have to say there were not a lot of highlights this year. Last year when we set up the structure, we really only spoke to the larger items that either swung positive or swung negative from what we either budgeted or projected actual. So there were not a lot of them. There's not a lot of notable items in this year's upcoming budget. But for our salary and related expenses, which we reviewed before, the total increase in dollars over the current fiscal year ending salaries is 3.36%, which is comparable to the market rates that we introduced to you last month from the likes of Willis Towers, ERI, and the other agencies out there. And then we just wanted to note that the state actually announced, I believe it was in early May, some increases of their own 2.5 cost of living adjustments retro to July 1st of 2021 through 2023, and then a 3% annual increment in January 1st of this year through 2024. And then also some special lump payments that they'll receive in March and in July as well this year. And then they also changed some of their benefit package to be in line with their bargaining unit employees for the health, the share cost sharing for their health premiums. So as a high level overview of general administrative expenses are 10.4% higher than the fiscal year 2022 projected actual. A lot of that is reflected in some of the conference and education expense that we included for the budget that was not expended during the year, primarily because we're still in the pandemic environment. And then for 2023, the general administrative expenses are overall 5.5% lower than what we had budgeted in fiscal 2022. For contracted services at a high level again, because we're gonna dig down deeper in these next few slides, the increase is 18.68% from fiscal year 2022 budget. And the largest increases are really a result of maintenance contracts for IT, licensing, software as a service as well. So total budget operating expenses of $4.254 million. So digging a little bit deeper into the general administrative expenses, our bond insurance, which is included as actuals in the fiscal 2023 budget, we had a 10.8% increase over the projected actual. I think what we were most hesitant about was the cyber insurance in this regard. And we ended up with only about $1,100 increase over our expiring premium with a new carrier. And our public officials policy increased just over $5,000. So office supplies and non-capital equipment decreased 6.3% over our 22 projected actual. The primary decrease here is removing one-time items, in particular our laptops, which we purchased during fiscal 2022, so they're not included in 2023. And under communications for telephone and internet, it decreased 25.3% from the projected actual. And as I mentioned here, various changes make that impact. We reclassed our telephone service from general administrative to outside services because it's now a unified communications as a service system, which falls under the maintenance contracts. We had a reduction in the virtual conferencing platform licenses that we held, and that's because of the telephone service that we brought in using WebEx as a platform. So the WebEx is actually accessible to all employees. And then the cancellation of our financial data platform. So this is after the first quarter of last year. So the removal of that for an entire year is also reflected in these expenses. Anyone have any questions about these? I've got one more under general administrative to cover.
Yeah, Cynthia, this is Peter. I do have just one quick question on that prior slide. And believe it's not a lot of money. I'm just kind of curious philosophically. Under office supplies and non-capital equipment, during the pandemic time when people were working from home, if someone didn't have a printer or they were printing out a lot of stuff at home and they were constantly going through printer cartridges or whatever, did CHIFA reimburse people if their job required them to have a printer at home and they didn't have one? I mean, what was CHIFA's philosophy or actions in terms of reimbursing people for office supplies when they're working at home? And I know it's not a lot of money. I'm just kind of curious philosophically what the stance was.
We did not provide any printers to anyone at home. We allowed employees, if they needed to print, a big batch of statements or something like that, to print them and then come into the office and pick them up. But we did, for those who had printers at home and did print, we did reimburse them for paper and supplies as well, for their home environment.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. So conferences and education expense, this has increased over the 2022 projected actual. And essentially, it's a result of budgeting for in-person events that still remain virtual or were not attended because of the pandemic. And it's a minimal increase from the fiscal 22 budget to allow for general conferences not already budgeted. So primarily what we have in our line item is for conferences and education, we identify those conferences that we regularly attend either annually or on a, every other year basis. But we've increased by about 5,000 the amount that we have allotted for conferences that haven't been identified. So that's essentially what we've done there. All right. Any other questions about general administrative expenses? I'm going to move on to contracted services next. All right. So for information technology, the first two line items we discussed during last month's presentation, we have a technology consultant partnership that we were going to establish with for basically to cover a lot of the risk-related audit, internal audit requirements. And we have the we're budgeting also the penetration testing, and then we always maintain a contingency for information technology in case of, the absence of someone or something comes up and you just need to manage it with a consultant. So this year we have in $20,000 for that. And then under our audit engagements other, essentially we increased that $10,000 over our projected actual for fiscal 2022. And that's to accommodate internal audit engagements with a new consultant. So the RFP was issued after the meeting in May, I believe it was. We approved the scope for the RFP for our new internal auditors. And so that was published at the beginning of this month, anticipating the new consultant and also a refresh of our risk assessment, as well as what other individual engagements actually are accomplished during fiscal 2023. Now, maintenance is the largest one. It says an increase of overall of 65.9% over projected actual. There was a small increase of $2,600 for a copier lease. A lease is ending. We'd add a new lease for another, for replacing the same copier, not a new copier, which looks like a lot, but it says 36.9%, but it really is less than $3,000 increase there. And then the copier usage is budgeted for, you know, a full year of staff returning to the office rather than what shows up in projected actual where people are not in the office. Our business continuity co-location expense increased 18.7%. That's a standard 3-5% increase that we anticipate annually. And just as a reminder, this is our New Jersey, Precipity, New Jersey location that is a warm site for us. So most of our, although we've reconfigured how we address our primary location here in Hartford and a location in New Jersey, but for the most part, it's a warm site where we would have to kind of turn it up if we had to fail over to the New Jersey site. If it was a hot site, it would be live consistently and we could just flip from one to the other. But if you recall, we went for a warm site. So that's what's located in New Jersey. And then we also anticipate potentially some cost increase related to the contract renewal, which ends in January of 2023. So that's part of that increase of 18.7%. And then with our maintenance contracts, we have software as a service. We have a lot of cloud-based offerings. We have a 34.9% increase, and that's not frightening. There's really nothing new in there except that some of these contracts were only for partial years. So now, instance, our Emphasis bond investment system is going to be in for the first year as a full year, and our UCAS phone system will be in as a first year as a full year as well, which we had reclassed from communications I mentioned earlier. And then increases in other SaaS platforms of about 3-5% are included in that 34.9% increase. And then for software maintenance, the increase over the fiscal 2022 budget, a lot of it is renewal timing. There are some contracts that are 2 years. We would have paid it in 2020. Now we're paying it in 2022, but it wasn't in 2021, that type of thing. Or 3 years, we paid for it in 2020, and now it's due for 2023, and it wasn't in the budget the last 2 years, that type of thing. And we will have a lot of five-year contracts related to our hardware that will roll back around in fiscal 2024's budget. And so you'll see a larger percentage swing overall in that area as well, come fiscal 24 budget. And then the changing in the licensing structure, which is increasing cost of service. So that is also being reflected in that increase. And then we had one new contract, and that was for cleaning services in the office. Do you have any questions related to contracted services? All right, I'm going to move on to our non-operating income and expense budget. And for that, we increased our investment income. Originally, we had budgeted 0.1% for fiscal 2022. We've increased that to 1% for 2023. For a total of about $116,000. And then for childcare programs, the 3% childcare loan interest subsidy, we have 5 loans outstanding for approximately $2.9 million in par amount. And for total non-operating income expenses of 3.125, includes a $3 million for grant programs and the client and non-client grant program, $2 million. And targeted grants, health equity focus, for $1 million. Any questions about that? I'll move on to the capital budget. All right. So we have one project in the capital budget for next year, and this has appeared, and you've heard about it previously in our strategic planning. It's called our client portal, as we've dubbed it so far. And this project really is to streamline the data collection from our clients so that they have a single point of entry. A lot of that will improve our communications, improve our continuity of our services as well. Give you one example with our compliance documents that we receive quarterly from our clients today. And as we, you know, staff changes hands, most of those documents are being received via email. So it's one of those situations where we still have to maintain a user who's no longer at the, you know, at the authority and their email address for an extended period of time, just so that we can make sure we flushed out all of those documents that would still be sent to the prior employee until they get switched over to the newer employee. This would avoid that entirely. If our clients have one place to enter for their demand stats, their impact data, for their compliance delivery of documents, it'll increase our communications with them, the confusion between, you know, a turnover in employees, as well as us having to send them out these you know, here's your username and password for your demand data. Here's your username and password for your impact data. And here's the person that you're, so we're trying to streamline that to make it a one-stop shop for clients in order for them to deliver data to us. So as I mentioned, the demand data for our sector analyses, compliance submissions as well for continuity, as well as document archiving, and better internal access to this information across the authority. And then the impact data for CHFIS programs, including bond and loan programs, grant programs, and CDC programs as well. And an RFP for this, an RFI for this was issued, and we received the results of that this month. And we expect to use the results of the RFI in order to make a determination of what that RFP is going to look like. That'll be published next month in hopes of making a selection of someone to provide that to us, the development to us in the fall. I don't know if anyone has a question about the capital project.
No.
All right. Any other questions overall? We do request approval for the operating and the capital budget for fiscal year 2023.
Questions or comments?
No, very thorough review, you know, easily understood and holding line on some expenses. The revenue seems reasonable. I appreciate the presentation, Cynthia. Well done.
Thank you very much. All right, let me stop sharing here.
Anybody else have a question or comment? No? All right, thank you, Cynthia. So a motion is requested to approve the fiscal year 2023 proposed operating and capital budgets.
Mike Angelini, so moved.
Second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Anyone abstaining? Okay. Thank you very much. That budgets
thank
are
you.
And with that, I think we are at the end of our agenda for today. Our next meeting is not until September, unless there is any other business to come before this committee. Hearing none, I'd ask for a motion to adjourn the meeting.
I move it.
Second?
This is Lawrence, second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Any
aye.
Opposed? Hearing nothing. Okay. Thank you very much. We'll see you all at the board meeting.
See everyone at 1:30.
Thank you.
Thank you.